What's happening, everyone? My name is David, and we are on For the Sake of Search. Welcome to the podcast, all about everything search from relevance to infrastructure. Today with me, I have Nick from Treve, and we're going to be talking about some fun things today, rebuilding Hacker News search with Treve specifically, and then also talking about some licensing stuff with some really popular formerly open source, then not open source, now open source again software. So welcome along for the ride. Nick, you go ahead, introduce yourself and Treve and who you are and what is Treve actually.
Yeah, I'm Nick. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Treve. Treve is an all-in-one infrastructure product for building search, recommendations, RAG, and analytics of those things. I think we use Quadrant under the hood as our search database, and I've been around for a couple of years. Our most notable customer is Mintlify. Their doc sites run on Treve for both search and RAG.
That's really cool, actually. I didn't know that. So can you tell us, like, how did you get into, like, this space of, you know, building a database? And also, how does, like, Hacker News search, like, tie into that?
Yeah, should clarify that we didn't build our own database. We do use Quadrant.
That's fair.
Yeah, but so we started a company called ArguFlow originally, which became Treve. And the goal of ArguFlow was to make software for argument mining at like large enterprises, kind of helping to use the embedding tech to track the semantic meaning of arguments and collapse them down, then eventually LLMs to summarize. And in the process of building all that, we ended up writing a lot of code. Like, it was significantly more effort to stand all that up on top of Quadrant than we expected. And eventually, like, when that wasn't going so well, or when it didn't seem like it would grow so big, we pivoted and applied to Y Combinator as with the idea of kind of repurposing all of our dedicated tech for argument mining, search, and summarization into an infrastructure product we offered to other companies, such that building search and RAG and recommendations with all the vector stuff would be a lot easier.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you mentioned you just wrap Quadrant, but I feel like that makes you a database. Like, if we're using that as our benchmark, OpenSearch and Elasticsearch aren't databases because they just wrap Lucene.
Yeah, that'd be fair as a description. Like, I think over time it's gotten even worse. We recently added like a BK tree for typo correction. So now we have like this gigantic BK tree system. and yeah, like a lot of the performancy considerations and things get pretty low level with our product.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, does Quadrant allow you to extend it? I'm not familiar with Quadrant as much.
Not so much. Their indexing libs are not super separated from the database itself, unlike Lucene and Elastic or Tantivy and QuickWit.
Very interesting. So how did you get into then? Let's talk about rebuilding Hacker News search a little bit. Like, what are you doing there?
I think that's the thing
you could do. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Around the time we were pivoting last year, so like October, November last year, we started trying to build search for Hacker News because we were trying to like market our infrastructure. And I think a lot of it is that we wanted a sufficiently large data set to prove that we can make it work at some level of scale. I mean, obviously it's not the biggest level of scale, but it's an amount of data that is non-trivial.
Yeah.
And the secondary part was like, we knew the data set. So like me and Denzel, who's behind me, knew like Hacker News and what it kind of contained, which meant that as we were building a search, we could get like a human understanding of whether or not it was completely broken or good or quite good. And eventually we like made an internal tool to put the current search provided by Agolia on one side and then our search on the other, like randomly, where we didn't know who was who. And I think we started to know we got close to something good when we couldn't tell anymore, like which one was which. And we're like, okay, we're making some progress now. Obviously, like if you ask questions or long form things, it's not like it becomes more clear who is who. But I think like the hard part for us was really the keyword stuff. So we got really excited as we got closer and closer to that milestone. And really like it became more challenging during YC and after, because we got customers, like normal customers, and started to get some revenue. And while we had all that, we were still working on our like white whale hobby project of Hacker News Search, which like ended up being cool. I mean, I think that trying to figure out the hardest part by far for Hacker News was ingesting, because we had to ingest like 40 million stories or posts, texts, as dense vector embeddings, splayed embeddings, and BM25 sparse vectors. Splays aren't embeddings, but splayed sparse vectors, dense semantic vectors, and then BM25 sparse vectors, all in like 24 hours for it to be like viable for us to kind of experiment and mess around. And like that didn't come until after we had customers. We probably figured that out like 2 or 3 months ago. And then since then, I've kind of been mostly working on the UI and front end. But like, you know, the launch went really well. It's like we launched this week. Yeah. It was front page. Not to interrupt those, I think we got pretty good comments. I was pretty happy with the comments because I felt like it was a good proof point that we covered all of our bases and there wasn't like major holes. Of course, there were some things, but I think generally people liked it and I was super excited. It's been like over 20,000 queries in the past 24 hours, which is cool. And just generally like enjoyed the experience. It made our product so much better. It showed people like what we can do. And it kind of gives us a way, I think like sales collateral is important as well. The way that we did RAG on it, I think is quite cool. We kind of feel like the whole managed RAG thing is a dark pattern. So the way you can add very particular things to the chat is that we've been trying to explain to our customers for a long time, and having it up on Hacker News is just useful and exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this is one thing that I feel like I talk to a lot of startup people and they're like, you know, we just can't figure out scale. It's like, well, are you doing it though? Are you living your product? And I think it's hard because not a lot of people like have an avenue where they can just say, oh yes, I can get this large volume of data that has actual users that can, you know, test for us, which is, super exciting. And that's where does all that data come from? You were mentioning it's
if you scroll to the very bottom of the official Hacker News website, in the footer they have a link to the API, and it's just a GitHub page with a Firebase API endpoint for HN, and it's a limited Firebase endpoint. Like all you can do is you can get the maximum ID, which is just like a monotonically increasing int. And then you can start at zero. So you go from zero to the largest monotonically increasing int, kind of scrolling the API, and then you get that data and ingest it or do whatever you want with it. Figuring out the API was hard. And then like, you know, you have to like show and ask, and a lot of different things aren't actually in the API. So you have to write that into your ingest. And it definitely, every time we like probably ingested 10, 12 times. And every time we ingested, we were like, maybe we shouldn't put the link. Like one of our final decisions was whether or not to put the link in the text we embedded. And we eventually decided not to, because it made the search a little bit too uncomfortable, which we did get one comment on Twitter after we launched. But those kind of decisions, like even adding tags towards the end, the last thing we did that was complicated was we added site filters. So you can be like site medium.com rag, and you can see only medium.com like rag posts. And that was like, that required us to ingest the root domain of every post as a tag on the stories. And then like we had to the HNSW index has to get recalculated like with those new tags, which Quadrant's really good at. But still, it was an effort to try to get that towards the end. And we did that so many times to figure it all out. So it's not, I'm actually hopeful. Like, okay, we wrote this big post called The History of Hacker News Search. And right before Algolia did it, there was another YC company called Octopart, legendary search company, if anybody knows. They do automotive part search for the entire web. It's like their whole company. They've been around for almost 15 years, I think. Maybe a little bit over, maybe 16. But really cool company. And they had a database project for search that Paul Graham really wanted to use for HackerDo Search because they were a YC company he'd invested. And Paul Graham talked about them doing it 3 years before they ended up finally building it and launching it. And when they did launch it, because Hacker News had no official API, they launched it as a competition to build something on top of their API that was underlying the search. And the winner of the competition got like a 24-inch Dell monitor for free. And I just thought that was super cool. I was like, I hope people build things on top of our API for Hacker News now, because it is like public and free, and we're trying to encourage people to like use it if they have interesting ideas for stuff to build on top of HN. And I think like to some extent that'd be a lot easier at this point than using the Firebase one, because we already have like the data ingested into some structure with metadata and tags and all the niceties you might want if you're going to build something.
Yeah, well, and especially when it comes to building search, like I think that's the one thing, like it's really hard building good search UX. I mean, you mentioned the keywords are as being a challenge, and that resonates with me so much right now. Like I always thought like, oh, okay, yeah, it's fine. You just like ingest the keywords and like, that's that. Well, it's like, okay, all of a sudden people are taking like substrings of keywords and they're like trying to search for them. And they're like, this isn't working. I'm like, that's not how it works. That's not how any of this works. No, that's super fun.
Even towards the end, like I think we had, someone was trying to search for free BSC. And they first of all, like on our Hacker News search, you can press a button and rate the results you got for a certain query. And he rated that his free BSD search results were not very good, and it's because we split on the Campbell case. So free is a token, BSD is a token, and free BSD is a token, and that means that if you search free BSD and you order by popularity, the most popular stories are just free and not free BSD. So you have to put free BSD in quotes and then order by popularity. That way it requires the concatenated token. And this is kind of like where I felt Quadrant hit its limits, or like our solution on top of Quadrant hit its limits, because there's no way to tell Quadrant like, hey, if the two tokens appear next to each other, score that higher, or like somehow restrict. I don't know. I think with our BK tree stuff now, we probably can do it because we can efficiently like use the BK tree to like look up the fact that free BSD is not a dictionary word and exists in the data set. So it's probably an entity. And that means we should require it as like a quoted word all the time. But our BK tree stuff is like so new that we haven't had time to do stuff like that. And I don't know, just classic tokenization problems, I guess. But it was cool. Like we had so much fun like learning all this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and this is one of the other things, like, I think a lot of people who use search also don't realize how hard some of these like problems are to solve. Like, and everyone's like, you know, why use Elasticsearch? Why use OpenSearch? Build your own search engine. It's like, that's all fun and games until you try. And I was given Postgres crap a couple weeks ago on
PG
the show.
PG Vector crap, you mean?
Yeah, PG Vector. Yeah, exactly. So that's fair. That's fair. Because Parade actually was doing some pretty cool stuff. But yeah, because their like relevancy calculation is called cover density, and it does just that. It prioritizes tokens that are closer together. However, it completely falls on its face because the original paper was written for like 1 to 3 term queries. And like, that's not the internet anymore. It's like people are typing like full on sentences and expecting results back. And I think that's where, I mean, vectorization gets really interesting. Do you want to talk about like Splayd? Like, how has that been deploying that, running that? I'm not super familiar with Splayd. So can you talk about that some more?
Yeah, I should explain a little bit about like what Splayd does. So there's kind of like the classic MS Marco, like beer benchmarks for search. And a lot of people made like sparse encoder models. Like I think Coil was a really popular one prior to 2020, if I have my dates right. I should have said dates. I'm worried I have it wrong. But Coil was like really popular, and along with a bunch of other models. And people found they could get like a 10. Man, I don't want to use numbers. I should have prepped.
It's okay. But yeah, you just ballpark it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they got like around a 10% lift, or like a point of lift, by doing document expansion or term expansion with Coil before they made the sparse vector, which is kind of like synonyming before you make the BM25 vector. So you synonym the data you put in the index instead of only synonym expanding the query.
Okay.
And I think like that's actually, I think, always a good idea, because it makes your full text recommendations a little bit better and kind of gives you like an easier way of visualizing your data some of the time eventually.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what they did. And Splayd basically like trained a neural net to learn those document, those keyword term expansions, instead of hacking it like manually, like with the pre-processing step, the way the Coil models were doing it. And that was kind of like Splayd V1. And then like they've improved Splayd since then. I think like V2 has pooling, and V3 does a few tricks with training that makes it even a little bit better. But at the end of the day, Splayd creates a BM25 style array or vector, if you're a Rust dev, set of tuples, where you have the token as the first value in the tuple and the indoc importance as the second. And what Splayd does is like Splayd term expands to include additional tokens in the first section of the tuple. So you have more tuples than you would with BM25. And then secondarily, it uses a neural net to figure out what the most important term is. So it tries to mark the entity or the adjective as more important than a stop word, or like remove stop words altogether in some cases. And it's really good at that.
Wow.
It's quite cool. Like, and Splayd does work really well. Quadrant released a paper called, not a paper, like a technique called BM42, which I think was received poorly. I mean, they messed up the mess. Some things went wrong with it. But broadly, like the idea of BM42 was to use BM25 tokenization, but then like a dense vector model to predict indoc importances in those tuples. And if you know how Splayd works, then that idea seems very correlated or linear. And that's kind of an overview of how Splayd works. I guess I will stop there.
It was funny. You were mentioning the BM42, and I was like, what do I remember seeing about that? I'm like, oh, right. So Joe Christian from Vespa tore them up with their initial. But I will say they responded remarkably well. I mean, like full up admitted the fault in their, you know, and it came back and actually produced some real results, which I thought was really interesting.
It still performs worse than BM25 is the important thing to highlight.
It does. So, but yeah. I mean, I think this is actually one of those really interesting topics, though, because like BM25, like I don't think people realize it's been around since like the like 80s or 90s. Like it is old, which is crazy that it's still effectively the staple. I do believe there is room for improvements on it. Like, I think it would be interesting. Like you mentioned, I'm going to talk about the token spacing. That alone, like, I feel like if we could find an efficient way to do that, that could really, really increase relevancy calculations with BM25. But
yeah,
it's for another day.
So
do you want to talk about Treves? Like, what? So you guys came out, you rebuilt Hacker News Search, you have some customers now. Like, oh, what are those customers doing, and what do they pay you for? I'll ask that nicely.
I appreciate that. So like Treve really, I think like there's so many buzzwords in like the latest stuff for AI retrieval. Like I could dense, sparse, Splayd, BGE, like cross encoder, Colbert, like, you know, you kind of like sit down for 60 seconds and say nothing but buzzwords. And for me and Denzel, when we were starting ArguFlow, that was so overwhelming for anyone trying to build like a next gen state of the art search for X domain. That's so overwhelming. It's really hard to know what the hell is going on. I think like, it probably takes you a month just to discover that you can't really use OpenAI or Gina Cloud embeddings because they take a little bit too long to generate and they aren't in cluster. So your search latency is like 400 milliseconds at the lowest because you're always depending on like an API call to an embedding provider. And that takes you like at least a month to realize. So then, then you have to like, you know, then you're setting up like your own inference service inside cluster. And then like once you finally have that, you're testing how good is each strategy for what I'm doing. Because, you know, every data set is different and the benchmarks don't always, they're not perfect. Like they're a good thing to look at, but at the same time, like once you're building for your domain, you probably have to construct your own benchmark data set with some ground truth that, you know, you as a human domain expertise figure out. And that's so hard. Like it takes so long to get there and it's so scary to cross that chasm. From a bunch of different perspectives. And like what Treve does is so great is you dump data into the API. Like you just scroll your data set, you throw it into the API. And then we give you a playground that you can go and you can test out hybrid with a cross encoder. You can test out BM25 re-ranked by dense vectors. You can test out splayed re-ranked by dense vectors or dense vectors re-ranked by splayed. You can turn quote negated words on and off. You can remove stop words, add them back, all from the UI, like just kind of playing around and experimenting. You can even make multiple data sets with different dense vector embedding models and like flip between them to test out how things are going. And you can make notes like for different queries and say like this query is doing good, this one's doing bad for this data set. You can view those notes from your analytics, like all kinds of cool stuff like that. Which really means that by the end of your experimentation phase, you've been able to like sample all the things. For real user story, like Mintlify wanted to get AI search. And I think they, anyone else, initially assumed that would be dense vectors. But when they started using Treve and they like loaded it up with dense vectors, they wound up deciding to use full text search, like splayed, with a bias towards the documents that matched an all words required filter, like everything in quotes, and only after everything in quotes, they like expand to regular splayed results, which in Treve world is called autocomplete, extend results true. But like, that's kind of a fancy approach. And they were able to like figure that out within 2 or 3 days using like Treve's playgrounds. And then like, I guess the second thing is it's so fast. Treve is Algolia speed out of the box. You don't really have to worry about anything with your latency. So there's that as well. You just get to like, you get to worry about the search quality and not the latency, which for dense vectors is a big deal. Because once you have dense vectors, you have to worry about database and inference. But we let you not worry about any of it and just focus on your strategy. Long explanation.
No, that was a perfect explanation though, because I think so many people, like you mentioned, they think that, you know, vectors in general are just like this, like, you know, magic hammer that they just get to, you know, smash all the data with, and it's not. And actually, the testing things can be some of the hardest parts. There was one really good example. It's, I, as much as I love OpenSearch, there are a lot of foot guns in OpenSearch, which is, you know, for those who don't know, a way to shoot yourself in the foot, so to speak, with how you do things. And actually, there was one that I included in demo after demo after demo because I actually didn't understand what was happening. So OpenSearch has, you know, an embedding service built in. And one of the things they don't tell you is if you send it text longer than 500 tokens, they truncate it silently. So it's like you've sent in, you know, this giant essay. This company was doing books. They were trying to embed an entire book. And they were like, yeah, the relevancy was just really bad. And I started digging in and I was like, wait a minute. Like vectors can't ingest like infinitely long text. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, and that's just something you wouldn't know unless you have that like speed to test to be able to say, all right, really quickly, this is really bad. Why is it bad? And it sounds like you guys also offer the expertise and the backing behind that, which is really neat.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's really cool. Like for something like books, the other thing that I think is kind of fun and neat is we call every document a chunk because once people kind of like, I think the latest gen search, that's kind of the way it's going, where you make chunks of your different documents if they're longer style documents, which of course messes up the way BIM 25 works because it's not designed to work with chunks. Mm. But anyway, okay. Like we call them chunks, which helps you just orient. And people will make like Mimlify, same thing. You know, they ingest different sections of a page as chunks in the API. And they they experimented with different ways of chunking. And they just made multiple data sets and tree with like the different chunking strategies and were kind of able to like land on the best one for them and their customers, which, you know, is like huge. And we are really like, I'm really happy that that's so easy in tree. Like it's so easy to make data set A, data set B, data set C and set them all up differently and then like run your evals against all three and figure out which one is the best. One feature I forgot to mention, by the way, like maybe it's worth it as an aside, is that we have the sub-sentence highlighting. Like, if you search and then you hide, like in our Hacker News search, you can see it. And we have like a complex system where we use Jaro Winkler distance for the highlights instead of just using exact word matches. And when you have semantic search going on, it becomes really critical that you have that because it's a little bit too imprecise to match on exact tokens. So another, it's kind of like a hidden, maybe not hidden, but like, because some people come to tree just only to get the highlights, but none of the vector DBs do that out of the box. So like, it's useful that we do, I guess. And it's something that we built on top of Quadro.
I don't know that I'd say none. Cause, who is it? I shouldn't say none.
I shouldn't say none. No, let me take that back. Okay. As far as I'm aware, as far as I'm aware, we do it as well. I should have said none.
Quadrant doesn't do it. And I think that's the key is you had to build that on top, which is a super feature. I mean, really, that attribution, I think so many people, you know, that's the other hard part about vector search is it's very hard to explain why a match was a match. And there's some work on Colbert or whatever that's starting to do some of that. Maybe I shouldn't say as well Vespa does it because I think maybe they were just doing a POC. That's really neat.
Anyone can do it. I think like one of the things people, I don't know. I have this general like feeling that people are really like caught up on like feature parity with like different systems. And I don't think it's as big of a battle. Like anyone can add the highlight system. Like we are a source available. Maybe this is a good place to talk about Elastic going open source. Yeah. We're a source available company. Like all the code is out there. It's not like the way we did highlights is a secret. We just did it. Other people could do it too. And maybe, and like, if they don't do it, there might be good reasons for why they're not doing it. It's not like, there's no dunking. Like, I'm not trying, like, I don't.
Yeah, think, yeah, that's fair.
Defensive about these because it's treated as like a dunk that somebody has a feature and somebody else does it. But that's not, it's not like that. It's like, we have this feature. It's cool. I'm not trying. I really regret my phrasing now because I wasn't trying. I don't want to dunk anybody else not having the feature.
Well, and I think this is like a perfect thing. No, it's all good. I think most people understand, or hopefully, that maybe we'll talk about this too, because like I got that a lot with open search, you know, working on open search. People would be like, oh, which is better, open search or Elasticsearch? I'm like, what are you trying to do? What is your organization like? Actually, organization structure and organization culture was probably the biggest thing between whether someone should choose open search or whether they should choose Elasticsearch, which I won't talk too deeply about that because I have a blog coming out that's going to talk about that a bunch. But what does source available mean to you? What do you guys license as then?
Yeah, so Treve is not built by a community. It's really just built by us, and we maintain it and support it. And really, like the vibe when you use the software is that if you have something to fix, you're going to come to us. There's not a big community around Tree. We're a very like small team that builds and operates the software. And the license is meant to reflect that. It's like, you know, we don't anticipate there being consultants or community experts that do a lot of work on Tree in the way that there was for Elastic back in the day. I don't know much about open source, but in the way there was for Elastic and Lucene and Solr for sure. And to me, that's like the real difference. It's like whenever you license a source as open source, you're kind of like, I think you're I think there's something there in that you're setting things up correctly for there to be a community that supports the product long term. And when you're source available, you're really setting up to show everyone what you're working on and how fast you're working and what the priorities are and like how everything works, but not so much for a community to build and support the product long term. You're orienting around the idea there's going to be some for-profit company that owns the product and provides support for it and operates it. And you're almost signaling that you want to keep long-term community contributors who don't want to work for that company away from the core product. So that there's not any hard feelings and there's like clarity on how things function, which is really the difference to me. And I have kind of strong feelings about that because I think like fundraising for Treeve, a lot of venture capital style people looked at open source as like a growth hack or like, and they were always wondering why would be source available. And I was like, really, it's just for trust. Like, so everyone knows how it works. It's clear that we don't have like some secret weird sauce going on, especially for search where it's so sensitive. And like, it's really important to get a sense for like the guts of the system. But not so much for like a community to grow around it. I think Elastic does a good job of that. Like Elastic already has, and OpenSearch too. There's already a great community. So I didn't really feel like that was where the gap was for our company to exist in.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And actually, this kind of comes back to what open source is, which it's not a business model like a lot of people believe it to be. It's a contribution model. And what you say when you declare a certain license is this is how we anticipate our users will interact with it. Like Parade was a perfect example. Their AGPL and their license basically allows people to use it for free. They have a certain tier that is not free. And that is where they're drawing their line. They say, this is the free version. And then we have an enterprise version. And I like that. I think AGPL actually is a really great, great license for people that are trying to both build a business, but still provide something to the community. And I think actually this is one of the places where I'm going to disagree with what Elastic did, because they started Apache 2 as a growth hack. I feel very much like that got them their community, that built their base, but then they changed it. And now they're moving into a license that I think fits their actual business model, which, you know, is AGPL. And it sounds like you guys as well have built a very clean line. Like it's nice that your Bizzle, or what is it? Yeah. Business BSR, source Bizzle. License. Yeah. Bizzle. Yeah. I don't know if people actually pronounce that. I said it and I was like,
I've never heard that's it, weird. But that's cool.
The business source license, I think that's a really nice one because, like you said, you guys are a small company. You can't support a massive open source community. And that's true of so many companies. Like, they don't realize when you say you're going to be open source, like, you know, and like Apache 2, people have expectations. Like, oh, I submitted an issue. No one's responded. It's like, if you have a company backing that, it's hard because that's kind of bad press. Which also I think is a little bit of what happened with Elastic up front. I think there was a lot of interest in people trying to make contributions, but they didn't align with Elastic's goals and priorities, and that was led to conflict.
Yeah, I mean, like, Elastic history, I got quizzed on it a lot during fundraising. And it's like, you know, you got to think, I forget the name of Shay's Compass. So, like, originally, Shay had a project called Compass, which had, like, a big forum with a lot of people on it. That we're all talking about, like, working on Compass, and then Compass got shifted into Elastic. Like, Shay shut down Compass, and then there was Elastic, and a lot of the community from Compass, from what I understand, I'm really young, and this all happened before my
time. That's okay.
Perspective. But from what I understand, I'm sure someone knows it better than myself. A lot of those people from Compass had translated over to Elastic, and Elastic had a really big burgeoning community behind it, to some extent, like larger than Solar, surprisingly. And I think a lot of that was because of the popularity of the Compass Forum, from what I gathered. And like, it was just architecting what people were excited about, it seems like. And then I was upset when license changed. As someone who loves open source software, I Like, yeah. I really am passionate about it and care a lot. We actually got Treve got started with a $40,000 grant from an organization called FUTO, FUTO.org. And they fund and they back open source projects for no equity. They just a billionaire giving out some money to open source. And like,
cool, why not?
I love that.
Yeah.
Even at Treve, like, I try to donate to all the open source dependencies we have. I care a lot about it. I want it to be sustainable. I want people to do it. And when Elastic changed their license, maybe as like kind of a very young engineer who's like a little bit hopeful or delusionally optimistic on open source, I was sad. I was like, damn, that fucking sucks. And then hindsight, like, it sucks extra bad because there were so many people that contributed under the premise of it being open and free to use. And when Elastic changed that license, they really burned a lot of bridges with the community, not just for their own project, but for open source as a whole. Because those contributors probably were not only contributing to Elastic, they're probably open source contributors in general. So what Elastic did to me was really, really wrong and put a sour taste in my mouth for open source on the whole. And again, like, seeing that is part of why Treve is BSL, is because, like, we wanted to be very clear that we are never going to betray anyone because we're BSL from the beginning. Like, it's a company. Yeah. We're not looking for contributions. We're trying to do this ourselves as a company. Contribute if you would like to because you care, but it's not going to be free. So
yeah. No, I think that's perfect, though. And I think, like, to that, I have a lot of experience with the license change being on the other end of it, which with OpenSearch. I think it was most hard seeing, like, there were easily, you know, 20, 30, 40 different companies who had their entire way of life crushed in a single instant. Mm. The premise of their company was wrapped around Elastic. And a lot of people, you know, be like, oh, well, they were freeloading off Elastic. Well, no, they were also contributing to Elastic. And also they were giving Elastic additional brand recognition because Elastic was trusted as a part of these other companies, which I'm not going to give OpenSearch a free pass here. They actually, I'm a strong believer now that for an Apache 2 project to be safe, it needs to be in a foundation. And I think that's the best way to build and maintain, you know, especially software licensed like Apache 2. Like AGPL, totally fine living under a company. Same with, you know, Business Source License, Bazel. I'm going to keep saying Bazel. Everyone just know that's what I mean. But yeah, I think that the way that everyone can contribute and be safe and know that their contributions aren't ever going to not be their contributions is to take away the entity ownership, which, to be clear, Amazon doesn't technically own OpenSearch, but what they do own is the trademarks, the infrastructure for building and deploying, the, we'll say, lion's share of the staff that's contributing, you know. So I still push from the outside, you know, the OpenSearch needs to be in a foundation. I think they're taking some steps to the right direction, which is great.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't even know that they weren't, but I 100% agree. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm probably at a point where if I see like a venture-backed company or an IPO company, like any company of any size, really, that is a company for profit, have an open source project, I'm always like, okay. Like, and during our sales, I felt this like firsthand during our first few sales when people would be like, oh, I can see the source code. How are you going to make money? And it was really like engineers who were going to interact with Treve and DevOps engineers who were staking their, not staking, but like people give a shit at the companies they work for. And they want the projects that they work on to last and matter for a long time. And whenever a startup is selling them something, particularly like a startup with the code available, They want to know that, like, whether you do well or you do poorly, the thing they build is going to live on. And being BSL made that so much easier because, like, the engineers that we were talking to, like, understood where we stood from the beginning. They were like, okay, if you do well, you live a long time, and you become large, we're going to have to keep paying. If you go under, it's probably going to get open source and be free. And we're like, yeah, you guys get it exactly. This is what's going to happen. Whereas if you're open source, it's like, it feels like there's always this layer of distrust now. People are like, oh, great, it's open source, but when are you going to screw me?
Right. It just, it feels like a when. Because, I mean, let's be honest, it's happened a dozen times. It happened with Mongo. It happened with Redis that became Valky. I guess I shouldn't say became Valky. Technically, Redis still exists. But HashiCorp did it. I mean, just like there's all these different places. And some of the worst part of it is like with the Redis one in particular. Redis, what they changed the source for the license was Redis Core, which is like was actively maintained by about 7 people. So it's not even like the majority of their engineering time was spent building Redis Core. It's like their engineering was spent on the infrastructure and the expertise, you know, for their managed platform, which actually operates in a very different way from Redis Core, which is hilarious to me. But yeah.
Like, that's kind of where I'm at. It's really. Like, even for us using Quadrant right now, I'm like, it's great for now, but like, I'm ready at some point for us to have to fork. Like, I know that at some point it's probably inevitable that we'll end up with our own version of it, because I just don't think it's sustainable long-term for us to continue using Quadrant for free. And I don't like that we use Quadrant for free. It's just the best arrangement we can come up with.
Yeah. I actually didn't think about that. Quadrant's Apache 2 licensed, isn't it? That's really funny, actually. But also, I mean, again, this comes down to like you guys now depend on it. And this is why Quadrant, if they want Quadrant to continue being a thing, should put it into a foundation. But this is the other part that I also, won't say I disagree with. I feel like Quadrant should have a license that allows them to continue operating it long term and profitably. I think this is an interesting part. OpenSearch can be open source because AWS. AWS can operate it at a scale and an infrastructure cost that they, no matter what, are going to have a competitive edge running OpenSearch. And that's not what they want to do. They don't want to be in the nickeling diming of, you know, this feature, that feature. They just want to build a really robust search engine. And they're like, if you want to run it, we're going to run it cheaper. And all your other workloads are on AWS anyway. So yeah, come to us. And I feel like that's why they can back a project like OpenSearch really well versus Quadrant, who, yeah, at some point there's going to be a partition where they're going to have to say, all right, we're not making enough money. Open source is stealing from our income, you know, but
it's just
it's
like
tough.
The other thing is trying to formulate the words.
It's okay. Take your time.
I think Quadrant is really good.
Yeah.
I think a lot of things are really good that are open source.
Yep.
At some point, if they become really, really, really good, then AWS will offer them.
Yeah.
And like that's
probably
kind of...
or Microsoft or, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a little funny though, because everyone's like afraid of AWS coming and running their stuff. And I don't want to say AWS has like built a reputation of this, but like you don't really see that with Microsoft. And I don't know why. Like, why doesn't Microsoft, you know, wrap things? Actually, I really wish they would wrap OpenSearch, and then OpenSearch can just be available more places. Much to my dismay, I am in Elastic every day, which actually maybe I shouldn't even say that though, because again, like right now, Elastic aligns with what my organization does, you know, and I think that's part of the thing. It's like the organizational alignment. If your org is in AWS, like it makes sense to use OpenSearch. Or, you know, there are a couple other like decision points. Like one of the things I really admire about Elastic is they have a very well-defined path for most things you want to do. Like if you want to do something, there's a right way to do it. And Elasticsearch, that's not the truth in OpenSearch. If you want to do something, there's probably about a dozen ways you could do it. Half of them are foot guns. The other half of them are going to be like super efficient and run at like internet scale. But
yeah, I was kind of like, if I read the announcement that Shay wrote, and you know, there was that like snarky section, which was like, AWS is now fully committed to OpenSearch, so we're okay with open sourcing again because they're too committed to OpenSearch to pivot back. And I was like, wow, that's so snarky. It's like, yeah, yeah. I agree with what you're saying. Like, I get what you're saying. It's
hard to take though. Like, and that comes back to like all those different businesses that I'm aware of that, you know, had to change their entire business model overnight. You know, it just kind of doesn't acknowledge all the hurt that they caused. And even for like businesses that didn't have to change, like this is this also talking about licensing. This is one of the biggest areas that I feel like people don't realize licensing affects. But when you do something like a license change, especially to a proprietary one, most of these companies have entire legal teams that are going to spend the next month or 2 months trying to figure out what your license means, if they can actually use it. And most often they're just going to say, yeah, you know what? We're not going to spend the legal fees. We're just going to move to something else.
But it's just like, it's so unfortunate across the board. And I really wish that more companies would just not go with open source license in the beginning as a growth hack, intended or not. Because as all of us are, like, a lot of people, a significant portion of us work in tech, and it's better for us across the board if the internet grows and tech becomes easier to use and better to work with and more people use it. And that means, like, we'd want our software to be better, like, across the board, because we'll have a bigger industry, and a bigger industry means more jobs and more fun and better everything.
Yes.
So it's like, pick the things that are sustainable because there's enough money to go around. And I would have much rather that Elastic's license was and still is something that allows for a company to exist. That way, we never end up with like, or I never end up like reading that snarky comment where it's like, oh, open search is not as good as Elastic and they're committed. Great, back to open source. It's like, no, why do we want that? This isn't good. Like, I'd much rather everyone be using a really good solution for search. And Elastic having been gotten paid the whole time so that they could have a company around it, maintain it, and keep building it. And AWS sell that thing and share revenue with Elastic. That way all the companies that depend on AWS can get the highest quality product, which maybe Shay is wrong and open search is a higher quality product. I don't know. I don't use these every day.
They're different. I think that's the hard part. Is they're like originally, yeah, sure, they were very similar. But now they're so different. And like, you know, I get into this a little bit more in the blog, but open search is becoming very much the thing that you build a search service out of, rather than Elasticsearch, which is an already functioning search service. Which that's very much how I would describe it. But yeah.
Yeah, we talked about it a long time now, but I don't know. I wish like everyone could collaborate correctly. And I think Futo, who we came out of, has like a big movement they're trying to start that hasn't gotten a ton of traction, which is fine and fair. But they call it like source first. And the idea is like what we as engineers care about with a lot of the time, not everyone, but me personally, and I think to some extent everyone at some level, like maybe not all they care about, but some extent, that we can read the code, know how it works, and fix a bug ourselves if something goes wrong, instead of waiting on some upstream support that may not care about our issue as much as we do. And the important thing for that is that the source code is public and it's well documented and you're able to edit and contribute. And I don't think it's so important that you can run it for free. I don't think I don't think FOSS, I wish FOSS and open source were disconnected terms. Unfortunately, they're very connected, and there's open source and source available. But open source really, to most people, means FOSS, or like free and open source. And I'm not a fan of this. I feel like there's a lot, the core pain that large companies with a lot of money that have engineers, like the core pain of those engineers at those orgs with the funding have, is that they're not going to be able to fix their own problems. Like that's the biggest reason to want open source software. But a lot of times, but that concern doesn't require open source. It requires source available.
Yeah.
And I wish that there was like, I just wish that was more of a commonly held sentiment, because I think that software would be higher quality, or like would be more collaborative across the board, and we'd have more clear relationships and bounds. But at some point it gets to this like nickel and dimey, is it free or not free? And I don't feel like that's as important as some of the other parts.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that comes down to understanding, you know, you have to care about the licensing, which totally honest, I had no clue about any of these licenses before I started working with OpenSearch. I was like, yeah, whatever, it's open source. That's like, what do you... there's actually a really great book, which of course I can't think of off the top of my head, but it's actually made by one of the people at GitHub. And it goes into the different paradigms of building open source software, which I thought was really interesting because there are so many different types of open source communities and like paradigms. Like one of the ones they talked about was, hold on, I'm also like Googling it as I find it. But one of the things they talked about is like, there are these like open source influencers like who like maintain hundreds of like tiny JavaScript open source things, and they really don't ever anticipate someone coming in and like contributing to it, but they just do it because they find it fun and they just build little things that they find interesting, versus like that's one like paradigm. And then on the total other end, you have these like massive companies like AWS that are like building these huge enterprise level software suites, and I just thought it was really interesting to see the difference between all of these different types of open source software.
Sounds like a fantastic book.
Working in Public. If you guys have not read this already, it is phenomenal. Working in Public, the Making and Maintenance of Open Source Software. I will put this in the description for today. It's by Nadia, and I cannot pronounce her last name. But well worth a read if you want to learn more about open source software. And with that, I feel like that's going to wrap up our night. Thank you so much, Nick, for coming and talking to us about Treve and about open source software. And as particularly, you heard it here first, don't be open source. Be source available. Make some money. Because actually, that's another responsibility of open source projects is you can't just leave it and forget about it for the rest of your life. That's not responsible. So if you need to make money off of it, make money off of it. If you're doing it for fun, do it for fun. Just draw a line.
Yeah. Cheers. I appreciated the time as well. Hopefully it was a good, I had a lot of fun. So it's like a really
good
conversation.
I had a lot of fun too. And this is actually why I'm doing this, is because it's like, I would have these conversations with people and I'm like, this sucks. I can't go back and re-listen to my conversation. So I don't know if anyone knows this, but I listen to my own podcast like a dozen times. I don't know why. It's just fun. But anyhow, thanks Nick for being here. Thanks everyone for listening, and tune in next time. I believe our next session, we're going to be talking about building relevant systems, which is going to be really interesting. So we will catch you guys later, and good night or goodbye. Take care.